Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Blog Talk Radio with Donna Crowe. So glad you guys are here. We have another broadcast with Mr. Smith, author of Insulin, Our Silent Killer. And he's here again today, and we're going to be talking about some specifics, some specific do's and don'ts. just right up front, I want to just really recommend that you get his book. There is so much information in here, and it really helps you. It really helps you to be motivated to make the right choices. There's information in here that you're not going to find in other diabetes books. At least I haven't found them. I'm going to open Mr. Smith's mic really quick, and then I'm going to do a little bit of an introduction, and we're going to go from there. Hold on just one second. Let me get him mic'd up here. Hi, Mr. Smith. Are you there?
Hi, Donna. You got me?
I got you. So you're live right now. I'm going to do a little introduction here, and then I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay.
I realize not everybody listens to every single broadcast, and sometimes people pick out specific ones that they want their loved ones to listen to, and so I'm going to repeat just a brief amount of material here. So I want people to hear this. And these are direct quotes from Mr. Smith's book. Just as a reminder, Mr. Smith himself was diagnosed with diabetes, and within 103 days, he was diabetes-free. And if he hadn't had to spend time studying to figure out what to do, he'd have been free of diabetes sooner. It doesn't have to take you 103 days. You can get there sooner based on the information that he's got in his book. I highly recommend it. So I'm just going to read you a few quotes. This report fully documents the nature of these diseases. When he says these diseases, he's talking about the various things that accompany diabetes. You know, diabetes is not just its own isolated issue. Diabetes results in atherosclerosis, heart attack, stroke, impotence. There's other things that evolve when you have diabetes. So he says this report fully documents the nature of these diseases, describes the way the blood sugar control system works. When you know how the blood sugar control system works, it empowers you to help keep it in balance. It identifies the role of insulin, defines the steps to a complete cure. I love that. It defines the steps to a complete cure and describes the preventive precautions needed to stay disease-free. As we've stated here before, your diet's either getting diabetes or it's curing it, okay? Additional copies of this report, complete with the bibliography, source references, and glycemic index are available. And so you can contact him for extra information there. Another quote from his book, hyperinsulinemia, as well as the list of degenerative diseases discussed above, are well understood to be lifestyle diseases of fatty degeneration and nutritional deficiency. They are epidemic because we look to sales agents or for food manufacturers to help us make our food choices. When we start making rational food choices ourselves without their help, this entire degenerative disease epidemic will come to a screeching halt. In this report, we present the specific dietary changes needed to prevent this disease from occurring or to reverse it if it has already occurred. Another quote. This is from page 16. It is not unusual for the advanced type 2 diabetic to be simultaneously taking many different synthetic medications. They are needed to compensate for faulty liver function, kidney function, blood pressure, high cholesterol, as well as other systemic problems. This represents a financial bonanza for the drug companies and for the medical establishment, but it represents a disaster for the diabetic because those pills don't fix anything. They attempt to moderate symptoms, but they don't fix anything. They never cause healing. There is no pharmaceutical drug that will cause your body to be healed of diabetes. But there is diet that will. So he goes on to say, this is why I was willing to face the unknown to cure myself rather than submit to this treatment rationale, which is not a rational treatment, I would say, in addition. And one last quote here. Fortunately, there exists an alternative healing methodology that quickly cures type 2 diabetes completely, permanently, naturally, and economically in the vast majority of cases without the need for endless treatment. We will discuss this issue and present the alternative methodology when we discuss the recovery program. So today we're going to talk a bit about the recovery program. You know, we can't cover every item in the book. I mean, he goes into great detail for every vitamin, every mineral, you know, there's just a lot in here. And but we're going to cover as much as we can. So welcome, Mr. Smith. Thank you again so much for being here. I love your book. I love your knowledge base. I'm so happy that you don't have diabetes, and I'm so happy that you've helped other people become diabetes-free. And I'm happy because I know that there are people who are listening that are also going to be diabetes-free, and it just makes me happy. So welcome.
Thank you for having me, Donna. It's a privilege to be on your show.
Thank you. And so take it over.
Well, at 81 years old, I figure that my research and study has gained me at least 10 years. They had me figured for a measured for a coffin when I was about 65, 70. And so at 81 years old, I'm well ahead of the game. And I certainly didn't do it with the help of any of the orthodox medical community. In fact, I when offered the opportunity to get their dubious help, I declined. This is probably why I made it to 81. I expect to probably make it to 91 or possibly even 101 if the rest of the world
Absolutely.
Lasts that long.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's see, the last, all of these shows, all of these radio presentations and discussions that we're having are, they're all focused on type 2 diabetes. And they're focused on type 2 diabetes because that's what I had. I would like to encourage some serious researchers out there to do the work necessary to get the goods on type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
It's a different animal, and I'd like to encourage some young fellow in his maybe 50s and 60s to hit the books, hit the libraries, go through, root through these old dusty journals, and get the answers. I know that type 1 is just as curable as type 2, and I know that they were curing it, at least in South Africa they were curing it.
I believe that's absolutely true, and I actually recently read an article about some researchers who had thought perhaps inflammation of nerves around the pancreas was part of the picture, and so they gave an injection that had capsaicin in it, which is an anti-inflammatory for nerves, and almost instantly the pancreas began to produce insulin.
So there's
information out there. I agree.
There's lots of it out
there.
Do
the research.
One of the issues I'd like to thoroughly debunk at this point is the idea that it's an autoimmune disease. It is
Absolutely.
Not an autoimmune disease. The immune system attacks the pancreatic beta cells and destroys them. But it's not doing that because it's gone bonkers. It's doing that because the pancreatic beta cells are infected and the immune system is doing its proper job of removing infected tissue. And so the trick is to, I know that in a late stage type 2 diabetes, Candida albicans, which is an opportunistic fungus, typically moves up out of the colon up to the ileum and the jejunum and the duodenum and makes it into the portal vein and attacks the pancreatic beta cells. And so many type 2 diabetics morph into type 1s because the fungus starts destroying the beta cells. And when it destroys enough of them, you just a little bit, you have characteristics of both ineffective insulin, which is type 2, and insufficient insulin, which is type 1. But anyway, I would encourage some young fellows out there that hit the books. Don't believe everything you're told by these orthodox medical community. And most of them don't even know what they're talking about most of the time. And it doesn't take much effort to discover that if you get in a serious conversation with one of them.
I agree, and I'd highly recommend if you have type 1, start looking, you know, prayerfully start looking, because the answers are there. And it's, I was reading this week that more and more young people, children, are being diagnosed with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. This is just unheard of, people. You know, this is a serious epidemic that that is spreading across the world, you know, and the financial implications of this are just staggering. And we can, you know, knock this thing in the head just by changing our diet.
Well, for those of you out there that are politically aware, which is an increasing number of people these days, diabetes and its complications, which includes stroke, heart failure, kidney failure, liver failure, all these are related complications to type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is a related complication. All the heart-related issues, arteriosclerosis, elevated cholesterol, these are all related to type 2 diabetes. Well, type 2 diabetes and cancer, which cancer comprises a whole new family of diseases. You can have cancer of almost any cell in your body, and they give it a different name. We now know that cancer is a infection of the cell by a fungus. The fungus gets in there, and it takes over the replicating machinery of the cell and starts madly making copies of itself. Well, this fungus becomes really, really proliferates in a body that has a high sugar bloodstream. So cancer and diabetes are related, quite related diseases.
Yeah.
And they are the two principal mechanisms for restraining population growth. All the Western governments are on record many, many times of taking the position that the most serious problem that the world has is overpopulation, and they have to do anything they possibly can to reduce population, reduce live births, and reduce longevity. And they've really got to get at this. And this is why you see all the actual real nonsense-type things in your supermarket. This is why the FDA is banning vital nutrients and promoting dangerous drugs. This is why all the things you're seeing are happening. There's a good reason for it. A lot of people think it's just because of money. Well, it's true that all these programs are set up to be self-funding. They want you to pay for your own demise. But that's not the principal purpose behind them. The principal purpose is the restraint of population growth. Now, this,
well, whether it's a governmental issue or financially backed, either way, we don't have to be victims of it. We do have a choice about what we put in our mouth, what we purchase at the store, and fortunately, you can still get real food.
Well, living in America has become a real-time daily intelligence test. If you try to blunder through life and make important decisions like what you feed your family without some careful thought about it, you're going to quickly get in a lot of trouble. America has...
Yes, and our population is showing that. You know, most of the population now is overweight and unhealthy and suffering from malnutrition. Even though they're eating a lot and they're overweight, they still are suffering from malnutrition diseases. And So you're going to find a lot of information in Mr. Smith's book that tells you how to eat right and tells you, you know, why you're eating what you're eating. What we eat is largely based on commercialism. You know, the foods that are in the store are not there because they're good for you. They're, again, there because there's money involved. And so you want to make choices based on common sense about what is actually food and what's a manufactured ingestible. So let's talk about what to eat and what not to eat.
Well, in the last show, we talked about the connection with fatty acids and fats and oils to diabetes.
Yes.
And basically what we found out is that the human body needs two families of fats, fatty acids. And the families are LNA and LA. And the LNA is an omega-3 fatty acid family. And LA is omega-6 fatty acid family.
Yes.
Both of these are polyunsaturated fatty fats. Now, you hear the word polyunsaturated a lot. Most of our degenerative disease is caused by excess polyunsaturated fats. And the reason that there's an apparent conflict here, these are both essential fatty acids, but yet they're the ones that are causing most of the disease throughout the country. And the reason, of course, is the ratio between them. The human body is set up to thrive on about three or four times as much omega-6 as omega-3. And both of these are polyunsaturates. And in the proper ratio, we need them both. But what's happened in this country is all the cheap, worthless polyunsaturates, which are mostly omega-6s, have totally dominated the fats and oils market. And so when you go out there to buy a polyunsaturated fat, you're not getting a polyunsaturated fat. You're getting an omega-6 family unsaturate. And instead of having a 3 or 4 to 1 ratio between omega-6s and omega-3s, we've got a 30 or 40 to 1 ratio between omega-6 to omega-3s.
And
this
and
causes
that,
all of the all
and
of
it's,
the
and
fatty
it's poor
degeneration
quality sixes.
That affects
yes,
the
it's
body.
It's poor quality sixes. It's not just that it's too much sixes. It's the quality of the sixes that they're getting.
Well, yeah, it's also the quality. Most of the polyunsaturates, the omega-6s, you find omega-6s in everything. Corn oil, peanut oil, safflower oil, the three toxic oils that I strongly recommend nobody ever eat, canola oil, cottonseed oil, and soybean oil. You find it. You find omega-6s in all this. But you find very little omega-3s in most of these oils because omega-3 is a very delicate oil. It's easily damaged. It requires refrigeration, and so it's much more expensive. Not only that, but a lot of these polyunsaturated omega-6s, they come from weeds. They don't even come from food sources. They come from weeds and non-food sources like cotton seeds, grape seeds.
People can be getting
whoever eats grape seeds.
Soybeans.
Soy is a weed. Even the birds won't eat soy.
So can I interrupt you just a second here?
Yeah.
So people can be getting omega-6s in their diet and still be deficient in omega-6s because they're the wrong kind of omega-6, correct?
A lot of the omega-6s that you get, because they're not refrigerated, are transisomers. They're
yes.
damaged omega-6s. They're omega-6s that the body really doesn't know what to do with except store them in fat cells. And it's one of the principal reasons everybody's gaining weight. So it's not just the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. It's also, like you say, the quality.
That's the point I was wanting to have people clear on.
You can't get good quality food from weeds. Rapeseed
right.
is a weed. Cottonseed is a non-edible plant. Soybean is a weed. You hear all this nonsense about soy being a principal staple of their diet in the Asian countries. This is not true. This is a fabrication. Soy has never been a staple food in any culture. Soy is used for condiments. You use it for flavoring. This is what soy is used for. It is not a staple food. Anyway, now you know what the salesman means when he says polyunsaturated. He's basically talking about omega-6s in a 10 times greater ratio than they should be, derived from weeds and served up to you as food. That's what the modern term polyunsaturates means. The oils you should be eating, and we used to eat in this country until about the 1970s, when they were all taken out of our diet, coconut oil, palm oil, clean tallow, butter, clean lard, flaxseed from cold water fish, hemp seed oil. They've got laws against raising hemp now. They call it marijuana. They won't even let you raise it. It used to be a staple in this country. Then there are some lesser known oils like cannel nut and chia. Strongly recommend pumpkin seed oil for men. Has great great effects on the pancreas or on the prostate. It's a good oil, pumpkin oil, pumpkin seed oil. So anyway, we talked about into a lot of this stuff and talked to about it in fairly serious depth. We left you with a warning about canola oil, soybean oil, and cottonseed oil. These are polyunsaturates too. And in addition to having all the other problems that polyunsaturates have, these three also contain birth control chemistry that renders the human population, makes it much more difficult for them to raise families, conceive children, and raise families. They've got chemistry in them, all three of these oils, that prevent that from happening. One of the things I mentioned, one of the really difficult problems of going shopping in the supermarket is avoiding these oils. And one of the places where you find these oils mostly dominant is in the salad dressing aisle. Walk down the aisle of the supermarket that contains the salad dressings, and you won't find a single salad dressing in any supermarket anywhere that doesn't contain canola oil, cottonseed oil, or soybean oil. And the theory is that if people buy salad dressings, they got them. Well, we decided no, that was not playing fair. So we developed some salad dressings, and we make our own salad dressings. It takes about 20 minutes to make maybe a quart of salad dressing that we like. And we maybe once a month, we'll get out a quart mason jar and get out the vinegar and the water and the rest of the ingredients, and we'll make up a good salad dressing. We make some pretty good salad dressings. I was talking to Donna about these salad dressings before the show, and basically they will make you completely independent of the salad dressing aisle in the supermarket. Not only will you get clean salads salad dressings you can feed your family, but you can do it for maybe $1 a pint, you know, which is a whole lot less than what most of these toxic salad dressings cost in their deceptive.
You'll feel better.
Hmm?
You'll feel better. It'll help your blood sugar levels. And so I asked Mr. Smith if he'd be willing to offer those as a bonus. So if you get his book on insulin, Our Silent Killer, he's going to add those recipes in for you so that you have immediate options for improving your diet. Because salad dressing recipes can be tricky, you know. Even in recipe books, a lot of them are just loaded with, you know, use this amount of canola oil and you know, they and sugar and, you know, so coming across salad dressing recipes that are going to help stabilize your blood sugar can be challenging. So anybody who gets Mr. Smith's book, he's going to include those recipes as a bonus.
Okay.
So
well,
I just want to say thank you for doing
that.
We get orders
from all over the world. And so when you I'll make that good. We'll do it that way, Donna. But I would ask.
I just want
to.
I would ask
when you order the book, ask for the recipe. Otherwise, I'll think the recipe might be, you know, the order might be coming from some other source. And,
absolutely. And, so if you're a listener, let them know that you were listening on Blog Talk Radio and that you would also like the recipes with your book. And again, you can get the book directly from him. It's at P.O. Box 7685. Loveland, it's like Loveland, Colorado, 80537. The P.O. Box is 7685 Loveland, Colorado, 80537. And you just send him $29 even in U.S. dollars and he'll get it out to you immediately. I'm not making any money on this. I'm just wanting to let you know, I just really want you to get his book because it's going to save your life. It's going to save lives of people that you know and love. It's going to empower you to help people in your family that are diagnosed. So I want people to get this book. So, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And I will send, as soon as anybody asks me for it, I will send the recipe out.
All right.
Let's see. The next thing I wanted to do was we got last on the last show. We had an email from Ted from Bangkok, and he went into a discussion about some diabetes. It was Thomas Dean quoted Ted from Bangkok,
right,
in a number of issues about relative to diabetes, and they asked me to comment on this, and so I will.
All right.
He said that, for example, the cause of diabetes is relatively simple. He says it's sugar and oil. Well, this is largely true, but I think it's a little oversimplified because there are some other things that can cause diabetes. For example, some lack of some key minerals, like chromium or iodine. These are also implicated in it. But I would say, to a large extent, this is true. Probably 60-70% of the type 2 diabetes out there is sugar and oil. The oil prevents proper metabolizing of sugar, and you get too much sugar to begin with. He also went into a discussion of diets, and he mentioned the Atkins diet, low glycemic diet, and some other diets. I'm not quite sure what he was driving at there, but my comment on diets is interesting. The body perceives a diet as a semi-starvation mode. And when you go on any diet, the body shifts into a high metabolism mode where it becomes more efficient at digesting and metabolizing your food. It's trying to compensate for the fact that there isn't enough food now, so it's going to be more efficient in how it deals with it. And so when your body goes into this compensation mode, it nullifies the effect of the diet. And this is why your diet only works for a few weeks or a few months, and then it stops working. And then when you go off the diet, you find yourself in a higher metabolic mode where you're more efficient at processing food, so you rapidly gain back all the weight you might have lost, plus a lot more besides.
So you're referring to a weight loss diet rather than a general
A weight loss diet. That's what he's talking about, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He figures weight loss is a symptom of elevated sugar. And we talked about that before. That when you have elevated sugar in your bloodstream, the liver processes it in the fat and stores it in your fat cells. And so the elevated weight is a normal consequence of sugar in the bloodstream. And you try to compensate for this by eating less carbohydrates. The liver just becomes more efficient at processing it and processing the carbohydrates in the fat. So anyway, he
it's
also
lose,
goes
lose
on to
situation.
Say that, he goes on to say that oils cause diabetes because they block cellular respiration. And when cellular respiration is blocked, it can't utilize sugar in the blood plasma. This is basically correct. He says the worst oils are the vegetable oils because they get easily absorbed and contain long-chain triglycerides. Well, they get into the membrane and they interfere with the transport of glucose through the membrane. They also stimulate the production of the wrong prostaglandins, put your body in an inflammatory mode. So it looks like a lot of people out there, Thomas Dean, for example, and Ted Bangkok, looks like they're catching on. They know quite a bit about what's going on here. The problem with disease, degenerative disease, amongst which is type 2 diabetes, is not just sugar and oil. It's a lot of things. For example, toxins get into your system, and they disturb the functioning of your liver. They disturb the functioning of your pancreas. They disturb the function of your kidneys. They completely unbalance your hormonal system. And a comprehensive survey by the Center for Disease Control found 148 different chemicals in the blood and urine samples of 2,400 Americans that they tested. More than a quarter of all these samples contained benzol, pyrene, benzoprene, a toxin that's found in automobile exhaust fumes. It's pretty hard to avoid automobile exhaust fumes.
Absolutely.
9 out of 10 samples contain a mixture of toxic pesticides, stuff that they spray food with and vegetables with. National Geographic paid nearly $15,000 to test one of their reporters for the presence of 320 different chemicals as part of an undercover investigation into environmental toxins. They discovered that the reporter's level of one flame retardant chemical was so high, it would have been considered alarming, even if the reporter had worked in a plant that manufactured the chemical.
Wow.
A Mount Sinai School of Medicine study found a total of 167 different chemicals in the blood and urine samples of volunteers. That's an average of 91 toxins each. They found lead, dioxins, PCBs, phthalate, DEHP, as well as compounds that have been banned for more than a quarter of a century. The bottom line to these studies, and many, many more like them, I won't read them all, every single person in every study was seriously contaminated. If you're tired all the time.
This is true not just with adults. So they've tested the cord blood of brand new newborns and found that on average they have over 200 industrial pollutants in their blood when they're born. So detox is definitely going to be a major part of anyone's regimen, right?
Absolutely. But I'm mentioning these things because it's not just the toxic stuff that's deliberately put into the supermarket for you. It's also the environment outside of the supermarket. So when you get the vision that it's time to start thinking about what you're going to do to stay healthy, don't underestimate the problem. It's fairly difficult. You need good, accurate information. That's very hard to find.
That's a really good point. Don't underestimate the problem. Because you can spend a lot of time in denial thinking that you're really, you know, we all tend to think it happens to other people, not us. Other people are polluted. I'm not, you know.
Every single person in the studies, the bottom line was every single person in every study was contaminated.
Yeah.
This is kind of scary. You know, at 91 years old, I wonder why I'm still here, because this is the kind of world I've been trying to live in all these years.
Yeah.
Well, we did a lot of discussion on fats and oils. We didn't cover the subject exhaustively by any means, but we did get into it enough to make everyone realize the seriousness of the problem. When you go into the supermarket and you go down the fats and oil aisle, there's nothing there that you want to buy. Nothing. Except possibly...
Absolutely.
Possibly virgin olive oil. And you got to remember that that's also a polyunsaturate, long on omega-6s. What you need... omega-3s, and the supermarket does not carry them. You will have to get them from the mail order, or you'll have to buy them from a health food store, or find other ways of doing it. Co-ops sometimes have them.
For someone who can't do, like, omega-3s from fish, what should they do?
Oh, I didn't get that.
For someone who's not able to do the omega-3s from a fish product, what are their options?
Well, there's quite a number of them here.
Flax would be one, right?
Yeah, flax is one.
The other thing I'd like to talk about today is the difference between complex carbs and simple carbs. People get confused about the whole carbohydrate thing, and
we'll talk about that.
The oils that you can
get are the fish oil, flax oil, hemp seed oil, pumpkin seed oil. These are all good substitutes. Basically, what you have to do is go back to consuming the fats and oils that we consumed before the major propaganda epidemic of the 1970s that switched everybody over to soy, cottonseed, and canola.
And Crisco and things like that, yeah.
Now, let's see. I wanted to... I guess I wanted to get into, when we were talking about type 2 diabetes last time, we pointed out the effect of the damaging of the cellular membranes throughout the body has on the glucose balance, sugar balance, and diabetes. And we also pointed out that there's a lot of stuff that goes on inside the cell. Once insulin triggers the cell receptor to start accepting glucose, there's a lot of stuff has to go on inside the cell in order for the cell to respond by sweeping that glucose out of the bloodstream. And it's that It's that that chain of events that happens inside the cell that I wanted to sort of get into today, and that has to do with vitamins, minerals, herbs, phytosterols, phytoestrogens, phytonutrients in general.
Okay.
These are phytonutrients is almost concealed. It's almost a hidden problem out there. Everybody knows about vitamins, and everybody knows about minerals to some extent. We've all heard about them. But vitamins and minerals just barely scratch the surface. Totally, including all of the trace minerals that we need, as well as the bulk minerals that we need. There are only 98 minerals useful. The rest of them are radioactive. And vitamins, there's only a handful of vitamins identified, maybe less than a couple of dozen. But with phytonutrients, this is a whole class of organic chemistry that you find in plants that is just becoming known. Dr. Jonathan Wright does a lot of work in this area. He's been pioneering the research in phytonutrients, and he's been getting some amazing cures of degenerative disease. Degenerative disease is a disease that's caused by either a lack of an essential nutrient or a toxin. And the cure and the fix for these things is get rid of the toxins and supply the essential nutrition. The whole idea of vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients, the whole idea has been approached terribly wrong by the scientific community. They've got the idea that every time they discover something, that's the end of the story, and now that they know all about everything, you don't have to worry about it. They can go ahead and synthesize it, make it synthetic, and when you take the synthesized product, you get what you need. Well, they completely ignore the much, much larger field that they don't know anything at all about because they haven't discovered it yet. So you got to really take a lot of scientific material that you read with a grain of salt, particularly when you detect this kind of arrogance in it.
So where do people get phytonutrients?
You get phytonutrients when you eat clean, whole, organic food.
So you don't have to be a scientist. You just need to eat healthy.
There are basically, all of phytonutrients that I know about are water-soluble. Most of the vitamins are water-soluble. There are only most of the minerals are water-soluble. There's only a few fat-soluble vitamins. I think vitamin E is fat soluble, and I'll come to the other one when I get there. When you consume these essential nutrients, other than fats and oils, for many, many years we've been going by a thing called a RDA, the recommended daily allowance. The recommended daily allowance has been deliberately set at a very, very low level. It's the level that prevents the obvious diseases. Like, if you don't get enough vitamin C, you will get scurvy and all your teeth will fall out. Well, if you take the recommended daily allowance of vitamin C, for example, you won't get scurvy. Your teeth won't fall out, but you'll be a basket case when it comes to healthy because the recommended daily allowance is so astonishingly low. It's typically 1% and 10% of what you need. So don't pay any attention at all to the recommended daily allowance. The physician's attitude toward all this is that if you take supplements, all it does is make expensive urine. Well, he's wrong. There's a lot more than that. Virtually all the vitamins that you get are synthetic, except vitamin C and E. They're natural. And even some of the vitamin E is synthetic. It's made of acetone and oil. The antioxidants, vitamins, are A, C, and E, and they're used to sort of quench the sparks. All your cellular metabolism uses oxygen. At the same time your bloodstream is bringing nutrition to your cells, it's also bringing red blood cells to your cell that carry oxygen from your lungs. And they combine the nutrition with the glucose with the oxygen from your lungs, and you have a fire going on in your cell. It's burning, just like oxygen burns wood. Well, this produces sparks, and the sparks that are produced are free radicals. And the antioxidants are the ones that quench these sparks, these free radicals. And that's vitamins A, C, and E are the ones you use for that. Now, just because you buy vitamins and take vitamins, that doesn't mean you're home free. It's false labeling most of the time. They're the pills versus capsules. Pills don't typically dissolve in the intestinal tract. They all very often wind up in the toilet. And so you've been paying good money for nothing here. Capsules only work or good, except when it comes to the fat or oil-based vitamins, in which case it can easily get rancid in the capsule and you wouldn't know about it. So you got to use some common sense when you're dealing with all this stuff. Take your fats and oils with a tablespoon, not a capsule. Take the rest of your vitamins and stuff in capsules, not pills. Now, some stuff like vitamin D only comes in pills. And the solution to that problem is to chew the pill up, bite the pill up, break it up in little tiny pieces so that when it gets down into your intestine, it will dissolve quicker. A lot of vitamins and minerals supplements are devised from some of the cheapest ingredients you can possibly imagine. Virtually all of them have an insufficient amount of ingredients. They follow the RDA, which protects the manufacturer. If you don't take enough of the active ingredient, then there's no chance that you'll become allergic and cause a problem for the manufacturer.
Can people take vitamins and keep eating what they've been eating and take vitamins and get past diabetes?
And still get diabetes?
And get past diabetes.
Well,
can you continue to eat what you've been eating and add vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients to your program and not have diabetes?
No, that doesn't work that way. You cannot continue to eat the stuff that causes diabetes and expect that vitamins are going to fix it. They're not going to do that. Remember, when we're talking about the vitamins and minerals and the phytonutrients, keep this whole conversation in context. We're focused on one small part of the diabetic problem, and that's the part that has to do with the transport signaling inside the cell that summons GLUT4 transporters from inside the cell out to the cell membrane to pick the sugar up out of the bloodstream. This is the little link in the chain we're focusing on here. And if you continue to eat food that damages the cell membrane or that encourages candida overgrowth in the pancreas and encourages other issues with diabetes, all the vitamins in the world aren't going to fix it. You've got to stop eating the stuff that causes diabetes. And the main thing that causes it is fats and oils, fat and oil connection. We talked about that last time. This time we're talking about the link inside the cell that is part of the transport mechanism that gets the sugar through the cell membrane.
So we need foods that are high in phytonutrients.
Yes, which is basically whole foods.
Okay. So
another problem with vitamins, and that's that they're often packed with fillers. They put inert or placebo type ingredients in the vitamins, and because of that, the vitamin becomes harder to metabolize in your intestine. And there's another problem too. And this affects probably the minerals more than it does the vitamins. The minerals themselves, the raw minerals like magnesium and zinc and calcium, are not absorbable at all. Your body won't absorb them. The body absorbs molecules of which they are a part. They absorb, for example, chelates. And the kind of chelates that have a good absorption efficiency are stuff like malates, phosphates, ascorbates, acetates, fumarates, glycinate. Glycinate is probably the optimum because glycine is the right size in Dalton's. It's the right size amino acid to escort minerals through the intestinal tract into the bloodstream. These different forms of minerals have different absorbability. Some of them are absorbed quickly and at a high level of percentage, 90%. Some of them are pretty poor. Calcium, for example, calcium ascorbate absorbs at probably around the 80%, 90% level. Calcium malate, orotate. These are all quite good forms of calcium. Calcium carbonate only absorbs about 2%, 3%, 5%. So you got to have some common sense about you when you're deciding which particular mineral or which particular vitamin you're gonna deal with. My book goes into quite a lot of this information in detail.
Absolutely.
Quite a lot of this detail is really a little bit beyond a radio show like this.
Yes.
There's a quantity problem. Right? We alluded to this earlier. Many, many times, largely because of the RDA, but also because manufacturers are protecting themselves from lawsuits, they recommend smaller quantities than you need. All right? Give you an idea of how bad it is. You need just one example pops to mind in this context. Everybody needs about 3,500 milligrams of potassium every day on the average. If you're a big guy, you might need more. If you're a little girl, you might need less. But you need a very substantial amount of potassium. By law, they don't allow you to sell potassium supplements with more than 99 milligrams of potassium in a capsule. So if you had to get all your potassium from supplements, you'd have to take about 35 capsules of potassium supplements alone. Now, if this isn't a direct attack on people's health, I don't know what is.
So where can we get it in our diet if we're not getting it in a pill? What would you recommend people eat in order to raise potassium levels naturally?
Well, potassium is, you get potassium in a lot of protein, along with a lot of protein. Meat has a lot of potassium in it. Meat eaters typically don't have a potassium problem. If you have low blood pressure, if you have high blood pressure, about over half the time, high blood pressure is a direct result of a potassium deficiency. And the only thing you have to do is add some potassium to your diet, and either through food or capsules. Vitamin C is another thing that comes to mind. We mentioned potassium as one of the minerals. But vitamin C is another thing that comes to mind. The RDA for vitamin C is down around a few hundred milligrams, I think, if it's even that, 50 milligrams or 100 milligrams. Truth is, you need between 3,000 and 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C. The RDA in vitamin C is only sufficient to keep you from getting scurvy and keeping your teeth from falling out.
That's right.
Vitamin
so
D
when I think of
enormous problem, enormous effects on a lot of things. I had some notes here, something I wanted to specifically mention here.
All right.
Let me find it. Here it is. Vitamin C competes with sugar in the immune system. Your body takes in vitamin C into the cells the same way it takes in sugar. And insulin is required to move both glucose and vitamin C into your cells. And if these cells happen to be immune cells, they won't function without a lot of vitamin C. This is why you need them. Let's see. There was one thing I wanted to mention here specifically. If the body has too much glucose, which is the diabetic case, and not enough vitamin C, which is also the diabetic case, there will be a lack of genetic material and inadequate DNA and RNA for the creation of needed immune function elements like leukocytes. So clearly the high sugar intake competing with vitamin C the way it does damages your immune system, and it's one of the loops that gets closed when your immune system gets damaged. Pancreas isn't protected. This is one of the ways your type 2 diabetes morphs into type 1 because the fungus gets in there and starts to attack the beta cells. Give you an idea of some of the what some of these deficiencies look like. With vitamin C, the RDA is about 60 milligrams per day. You need a minimum of 3,000 to 5,000. Our body once made its own vitamin C. Somewhere along the line, probably before the flood of Noah, our bodies lost the ability to make certain enzymes. It was an RNA, DNA change, and we lost the ability to make the enzymes that manufacture vitamin C. Typically, when we're healthy, we need from 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. And when we have an infection or an inflammatory process somewhere in the body, this need for vitamin C can easily go up to 15,000 milligrams per day. And we don't make any of it. Well, when this starts to happen, you get into a real double bind here. Because too much vitamin C will cause diarrhea. And when diarrhea starts, you quit absorbing any more vitamin C and it all goes down the toilet. And this typically will start with most people around 5,000 or 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. So if you have an infection or an inflammatory process, a serious inflammatory process, you can't get 15,000 milligrams of vitamin C by taking it orally. This is one of those rare situations where I would tell you to go find a cooperating doctor and have him give it to you intravenously. And the only reason I tell you to go find a doctor to do that is because the law prohibits anybody else from doing anything intravenously.
So what about the average person? Can they get the vitamin C that they need from natural fruits and vegetables?
Probably not. Some of these macro elements like vitamin, the bulk minerals like calcium, magnesium, potassium, selenium, zinc, iodine, these are what I call the bulk minerals. And the basic vitamins, most of them, all the B vitamins, the C certainly, vitamin A. Vitamin A you might be able to get enough if you eat enough vegetables and stuff. Folic acid, if you're a vegetarian, you won't get any folic acid at all because it's entirely sourced from meat products. If you vitamin D, most of your vitamin D is produced from sunshine. If you're not out in the sun, you need to supplement it. Typically, I would say in the case of all the vitamins, you should supplement them. And don't rely on getting them from your food because food is highly variable. Some of it will have some of it won't. Our food lost most of its minerals back in 1937. The bulk minerals like calcium, magnesium, potassium, selenium, and zinc, and iodine, you must supplement. Now, these are bulk minerals. These are minerals you need a lot of every day. Okay? Iodine, for example, we talked about iodine. Everybody in the country is deficient in iodine. There's nobody in the country that isn't, except a rare individual that supplements it substantially. The RDA for iodine is about 100 micrograms, and we're told that we get that because it's added to our table salt.
And a lot of people are not eating regular table salt that's iodized anymore. Most people have gone to sea salt, you know, raw salt that doesn't have iodine in it, so it's gotten even worse.
Yeah.
So one of the products I carry is iodine for that purpose. Iodine is absolutely essential, and it's essential for thyroid health. Your thyroid is essential for overall body health. You need iodine, and again, because, as he said, our soil doesn't have it in it, 98% of the population is low in iodine, and it causes a whole cascade of issues. On the other hand, if you have adequate iodine, you're highly protected from viruses, fungus, bacteria. If you have adequate iodine, it's almost impossible to get breast cancer.
Breast cancer is almost certainly a deficiency deficiency of iodine.
Absolutely.
This is why the ladies need 2 or 3 times as much iodine as the men do. Men use iodine throughout their body metabolism the same way women do, and they need the research turned up the need for 12.5 milligrams of iodine every day. But if you've been iodine deficient for a long time,
go ahead.
You need a lot more than that. You should be supplementing with probably 50 milligrams of iodine every day, and you should do this for 2 or 3 months because it takes a while to build that iodine back up in your system. Mandatory for the operation of your thyroid. All right? It's mandatory for the operation of women's breasts. And that's whether they're lactating or not. It doesn't matter. They need it just to keep them healthy. What I would recommend is 2 drops of Lugol's produce the requirement of 12.5 milligrams of iodine a day. 2 drops. But I would recommend probably 10 drops of it a day for a couple of months, or until you can pass the stain test. Now, there's a way to find out, an easy way to find out whether you're deficient in iodine. And what you do is you perform what I call the stain test. Take a cotton swab and paint on some discrete part of your body, where it wouldn't be embarrassing. Paint a little circle or an oval or a solid patch about the size of a silver dollar. Paint it, thoroughly paint it with iodine, so it's very well stained. You got a silver dollar-sized iodine stain. Notice when you did this. And then check it from time to time and see how long that stain lasts. If that stain doesn't last you 24 hours, it means you're iodine deficient. Because what will happen is the body will suck that iodine up through the skin, get into the bloodstream, and take it directly to where it's needed. If you're as iodine deficient as most people, and you perform the iodine stain test, that stain will be gone in an hour and a half. Am I getting through?
Yeah, absolutely. I have information on Lugol's iodine on my website that's called excellentthings.com. So you can go there and read up more on that. There's information there about just all the ways that iodine is helpful for you and dosages and, you know, those kind of things. So they can read more there. That's at excellentthings.com.
Okay, well, now let me tell you a little bit more about the importance of iodine. For years and years and years in this country, iodine was cheap. When I bought our iodine around here, I paid $20 for a gallon bottle of it, gallon jug of it. And it was like 15 years ago. Well, when people started to find out, a lot of loudmouths like me started sounding off about iodine. Government got disturbed by that, and so they essentially outlawed iodine. They took iodine away from you. And the way they did it was they declared that iodine is a necessary ingredient of the manufacture of amphetamines. And since it can be used to manufacture illegal dope, they're going to take it away from the entire population, virtually everybody of whom does not make dope. So that was the rationale. They took it away from the entire country because a handful of people were using it to make dope. They completely ignored the fact that the handful of people that still need it can still get it. But all the people in the country that also need it for different reasons entirely to keep their health, essentially now can no longer get it, at least not as cheaply as they used to.
It is still available, but it is much more highly regulated, and because of the regulations, the price has gone up. It's still one of the least expensive supplements on the market. I know that the product that I have is 2 ounces. It's about $20, and that 2 ounces lasts the average person a good 6 months. So it's still a good deal, and your body needs it. If you don't know about iodine, you need to read up on it and find out about it. We have about 20 minutes left. I want to make sure we talk about complex carbs and simple carbs. Also, you had mentioned to me the effect of sodium on glucose, which was new information to me, and I think that our listeners are going to really want that information.
Oh, okay. See how to get into this. These systems that the body uses to control blood sugar are known in the engineering community as feedback control systems. And basically the way a feedback control system works is you've got some sensors in the body that sample the blood to figure out how much glucose is in it. And then these sensors trigger the beta cells to produce insulin, and for the purpose of putting out enough insulin to take care of the amount of sugar that's in the blood. It's carefully designed so that it puts out the right amount of insulin, not too much, not too little. And so this is how the basic system works, how the feedback control system works. Well, these systems have been studied in great detail by the engineering community. And not only is it important how much glucose there is in the bloodstream and how much insulin needs to compensate that much glucose, but there's also a time element involved. How fast is that glucose going into the bloodstream? And how fast is the insulin going into the bloodstream to compensate it? And when glucose is detected and insulin is triggered, there's a lag time there. When carbohydrates are eaten and glucose appears in the bloodstream, there is another lag time between the time you eat the glucose, the carbohydrates, and the time you get it into the bloodstream. Also, the lag time, how fast or slow you get sugar in the bloodstream from carbohydrates that you eat, how fast or slow this happens depends on what carbohydrates you eat. This is where the term high glycemic and low glycemic comes in. It doesn't have anything to do with how much sugar the food contains. It has a lot to do with how fast the sugar gets digested and metabolized. If it is, you've got a fast carbohydrate, a high glycemic carbohydrate, it gets digested and swept into the bloodstream very, very quickly. Usually get much quicker than the insulin mechanism can produce insulin. And so when you eat this, this is why your blood sugar shoots way up. Take a spoonful of sugar, and it'll drive your blood sugar right through the roof right now, because the insulin mechanism can't respond fast enough to get it into the bloodstream fast enough to keep the sugar from overshooting. So this is the difference between a high glycemic and low glycemic. It's essentially, it would have been better named if people were more aware of how things work. It should have been named fast carbohydrates and slow carbohydrates. Okay?
So when we're working to stabilize blood sugars, we want to make sure that we're staying away from fast carbohydrates and that we're including the slow carbohydrates in our diet.
Absolutely. This is what the glycemic table is all about. What it
so
does
some
is
examples...
relieve pressure on your pancreas. And so your pancreas can sort of keep up. It can keep up with slow carbohydrates, but it can't keep up with fast ones. Now, the salt problem. It takes two molecules of salt, or two atoms of salt, molecules, I guess, in order to escort one molecule of glucose across the villi in the intestines into the bloodstream. So, salt is ubiquitous. It's in everything you eat. Sodium and salt. Your intestine always has a supply of salt in it. And this salt is used by the intestinal digestive process to escort the sugar from the intestine across the villi into the bloodstream. Basically, when I was pondering some of this stuff and trying to figure out how it worked, I was wondering what would the all-time worst possible food be for people to eat? Well, there are a lot of candidates. There's a lot of pretty bad food out there. I finally settled on the fact that French fried potatoes would be the absolute worst food you could possibly eat. And my reasoning goes something like this. First, the potato itself isn't the whole potato. It's only the white part of the potato, which is the starch part of the potato. And starch is nothing but glucose molecules connected together in a chain. It's pure glucose. No nutrition at all, just glucose. Second of all, when you prepare French fry potatoes, you cook them in rancid polyunsaturated oil. They get soaked in it. Then after you drain the oil off, the oil that will drain off, then you liberally sprinkle them with salt. This absolutely guarantees that you're getting a huge spike of very high glycemic to almost pure sugar. At the same time, you're getting trans fatty acids and polyunsaturated fats to wreck your ability to process that sugar into the cells. Until I find something worse, I'm going to keep French fried potatoes at the very top of my list of the absolute worst foods anybody could eat. When you go to an American restaurant, all these fast food restaurants,
they
have a pot of rancid oil back there soaking French fried potatoes in. Always.
Well, along the same lines, if you go to the grocery store and go down the aisle that has boxes and bags of crackers and chips, it's going to be the same concept, right? These are simple carbohydrates, fast-burning carbohydrates, cooked in canola oil, soy oil, the bad oils, with all kinds of preservatives and things, but they're also highly covered in salt. So again, you've got a simple carbohydrate covered in salt, so you've got sugar and salt and funky oils that you're putting into your body. So these are going to be the kind of things that are going to promote diabetes, correct?
Absolutely. Pretzels, by the way, are the same way. Pretzels, potato chips, corn chips.
Yes, so all these little salty, snacky, simple carb things.
Corn chips
cereal.
Are a little better, but the problem with corn chips is most of it's genetically modified.
Genetically modified, yes. But we also see the same thing with cereal. The cereal aisle has got the same thing going. It's food that's been so highly processed that it's no longer really food. It's just simple carbs, fast-burning carbs, and again, a lot of sodium, and then they add sugar to it. So it's already a simple sugar product that has sugar added to it, and all the artificial colorings and flavorings and the bad oils. And so these are all foods that are going to promote diabetes.
Absolutely.
Correct?
I can tell you there are aisles in the grocery store that I do not ever even go down. I don't travel down the aisles that contain salad dressings. I don't travel down the aisles that contain these snack foods. I don't travel down the soap powder, any aisles that have soap powder and all these soaps for other reasons. I'm getting to the point now where there's only about three or four aisles in the store that I ever go to. And the reason is because none of the other aisles have anything that I want to buy.
Yeah, that's my experience, too. And if you go to some foreign countries, you'll find that their grocery stores are very simple compared to ours because they don't have as much in the way of manufactured food. Their grocery stores look more like a fruit stand or something. You can get the bulk section where you can get the whole grains, the bread section, the meat section, and the fruits and vegetables section, and all the artificial stuff's just not there. So if someone's going to sit down, and figure out their menu for a week, let's talk about percentages, like how much protein, how much healthy fats and oils, how much carbohydrates in their diet.
Well, my diet? Oh. Gee, what do I... Lately I've been making some burritos.
Mm-hmm.
We found a meat market that has clean meat. So we get some ground hamburger and we get some burritos that are made, tortillas that are made out of multi-grain tortillas. multigrain. There's about three or four different grains in it. And we put some hamburger in it. And I found I can eat a little cheese. After my diabetes got fixed, I can eat a little cheese. So I grew a little grated cheese on it. And put some raw onions. We found some organic raw onion. And put some organic lettuce and stuff like that in it. And makes a fairly passable meal.
Sounds pretty normal to me. Doesn't sound too strange and out there, you know. I think sometimes people are under the impression that they're going to have this terrible diet and it's just going to be so awful that they'd rather die of diabetes than eat. And the truth is, you can eat really good, delicious food. If you're going to cook with oils, you have to know how to do it. If you're going to have oils in your diet, you have to have the right kinds of oils. You want live, wholesome food, and it can be the most delicious food on the earth. And the truth is, once you start eating this way, you can't stand to put that other stuff in your mouth. It just tastes terrible to you. You're suffering from perverted palate. You know, you want to give yourself just a month to eat healthy, and you'll find it hard to go back to the funky stuff. But my question was, what percentage of their diet should be protein? What percentage should be complex carbs? What percentage should be oils and healthy fats?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, isn't it like
I've never
maybe
really
10%?
Given that much thought. I think if you just set out to make some palatable recipes out of whole food, those questions ought to solve themselves. I think carbohydrates, low glycemic carbohydrates, should probably form around 60-70% of your diet.
Mm-hmm.
And the proteins and fats and oils should be the rest.
Right.
For example, I frequently, for breakfast, a lot of times I'll crack a couple of eggs, I'll scramble a couple of eggs, I'll use a tablespoon of coconut oil to wet the pan, you know, so the egg doesn't stick to it. Crack a couple of eggs in it. I'll sprinkle some oregano or thyme or some spices that I like. I like some hot peppers a lot of times. And scramble up some eggs and stuff them in one of these multigrain tortillas. Makes a nice breakfast. A lot of times I'll make up a big pot of chili. We'll get some decent quality hamburger and a couple of big raw onions and some chili powder and pinto beans, and we'll make up a couple of gallons of chili.
Once again, it's really normal food. I think, you know, people come to our house and eat. They're always really surprised because we eat normal food.
Yeah, it's normal food.
They're going, "This, we eat this kind of food," but they don't. They think they eat this kind of food, but there's a big difference between your chili and their chili. Your chili doesn't have the terrible oils in it. It's not going to have...
That's right.
You know,
my chili is not contaminated.
Yeah, it's not going to have the artificial colorings and all kinds of stuff, you know. So, again, I want people to know your diabetes diet is delicious, satisfying, and health and energy promoting. It's not just, you know, this gruesome thing that you're going to have to force yourself to do every day. It's not hard. In fact, I'm going to do another broadcast and talk about this a little bit more in depth. I'll do it this coming Tuesday, and just because I know it seems like a big deal, but it's not a big deal. It's a very easy thing, and so we'll go into this a little bit more.
We didn't get into the vitamins and the minerals as deeply as I would like.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do that next. I'm not going to do that next week either because I can't just do it. Your book has it in there. People really need to get your book in order to understand that. But I just want to talk about some various herbs, various supplements that people have found helpful.
Let me tell them how to get the book. And that'll take care of the vitamin issue. You can get the book by sending $29 to Thomas Smith, Post Office Box 7685, Loveland, Colorado, 80537.
Yeah.
That's Thomas Smith, Post Office Box 7685, Loveland, Colorado, 80537. It costs $29. We pay the shipping costs anywhere in the country.
And be sure and ask for the dressing recipes when you write for his book.
Oh, absolutely. If you remember to do that, I'll send you some printed versions of these recipes. The book contains a recipe, one. I've put that recipe in the book because a Chinese nutritional counselor that I had a lot of regard for recommended it. It's a very interesting recipe. Just about everybody that's tried it likes it. I put it in the book, figured it was going to be a universal recipe for all diabetics. It wasn't until after the book was published that I find about 90% of the diabetics can handle it, but about 10% of them can't.
Okay.
So that's something to look
forward to. So try it and find out, yeah.
Well, let's see. Where do we leave off here?
Well, I just want to encourage people that they can take back their power when it comes to their health, that knowledge increases your confidence. And so find out. You know, Dr. Smith's book is excellent. Next week I'm going to recommend a couple other books. Educate yourself. Educate yourself. Educate yourself because your confidence level will come up. You'll begin to see and understand. Once you see and understand how the systems work and you know what to eat, you can do it, and you can get this back. And I have had clients that had their blood sugar stable in 3 days, you know. And
we've had that.
It can turn around really quickly. And I've had people who had diabetes all their life, severe, severe cases, who are now completely free. And so I know it can be done, and many people have had this experience and are now rejoicing and celebrating good health. And when you eat this way, not only do you prevent diabetes, you prevent a whole host of other things. You begin to be free from colds and viruses and all the nasty stuff that goes around. You're preventing cancer when you're doing this. It's you prevent a world of illness when you choose to change your diet. And so I just encourage people, you don't have to be a victim. You don't have to be on pharmaceutical medications that imbalance your system and cause more problems, causing you to need more medications, causing more problems, needing more medications, and so that you live a miserable life and end up in a grave. You can change your diet. You can eat rationally rather than according to what the advertisers would like you to eat. You can eat the kind of food that people had in all of the world's history up until about 100 years ago. You can eat normal, natural food that comes from the earth. You can enjoy it, be satisfied, and have your health. And so that's why we're here. We want you to be empowered. We want you to have your health back. We don't want you to go blind, lose your feet with amputation, or have kidney failure, or have any of the multitude of terrible things that come with it. So I just want to thank you again, Mr. Smith, for doing this. I know that you're extremely busy, and I really value your time, and I know the people listening really value it. And so I just thank you so much for coming and sharing. And I've learned a lot. I thought I already knew quite a bit, but I learned a bunch more, and I appreciate it, and I just thank you.
Well, I'm glad to help out. I have a private agenda here. I am trying to get canola oil, soybean oil, and cottonseed oil completely out of the stores. And if
there are other people that join in with you in that. And if people don't buy it, it'll come off the shelf rather quickly. So we do need to get this word out. We have like 45 seconds left. So if you have something to say, jump in.
Well, the biggest change that we're recommending is that you learn how to cook. Learn how to use spices. Learn how to cook basic foods like beans and rice. And learn how
vegetables.
To cook vegetables for a week instead of just one meal. Because everybody's
busy.
But learn how to cook your own food, and that one step, just that one decision, will have enormous...
We have 5 seconds. I'm saying thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. God bless you. See you next time.